Hello, I'm Jill Ament with KWBU News in Waco. As we continue our series on poverty in the city of Waco this month, we're also taking a look at poverty at Waco ISD. Many of Waco's schools serve poor neighborhoods. 89% of the district is on free or reduced lunches. Students at J.H. Hines Elementary in East Waco are at a 97% economic disadvantage. At Indian Spring Middle School in downtown Waco, 93% of students there are also at an economic disadvantage. A majority of the students who attend these schools are either Black or Hispanic. In this conversation, I speak with J.H. Hines Principal Trey Hall, Indian Spring Middle School's new principal, Dr. John Jenkins, and Waco ISD Superintendent Bonnie Kane. Joining me today is Dr. Bonnie Kane, the superintendent with Waco ISD. And Dr. Kane, if you could just clarify how long you've been with this district.
Yes, in March it will be 4 years.
Okay, great. And also with me is Mr. Trey Hall. He's the principal of J.H. Hines Elementary School. And Mr. Hall, how long have you been there?
This will be my second year at J.H. Hines.
Okay, great. And then Dr. Jenkins, John Jenkins, is the principal at Indian Springs Middle School. And we were just talking about how this is your fourth month.
I believe it's my fourth month at Waco ISD.
So I'm going to, first of all, throw out some numbers there, just kind of relating to poverty in Waco. And I'm sure these are numbers that you all are very familiar with. So right now, to get a grand scheme of things, Texas has a poverty rate of about 17%, but the city of Waco itself has a poverty rate of about 28.7%. So Waco's poverty rate has increased greatly within the past 40 years, according to a 2012 study done by the Poverty Solutions Steering Committee in Waco and the Baylor School of Social Work. And that study showed over 35% of Waco kids are living in poverty today. Or at that time of 2012.
We have kids that the only meals they get come from Waco ISD. We have kids that unfortunately have to grow up much, much too soon, and the schools are their home.
So that kind of segues into my first question, which is with this, you know, relatively higher poverty rate compared to the state of Texas, what are some of the challenges that students in poverty here in Waco are facing when it comes to receiving a quality education?
Well, I think that, you know, some of the challenges we face are, number one, we're compared with other schools with lower rates of poverty. Lots of times our teachers kind of get a bad rap in Waco ISD and J.H. Hines because we're compared to students, you know, schools that have students that are, you know, 30% poverty or, like you said, 17% poverty. And things that work in school districts that have 17% poverty are a lot different than things that work in, say, J.H. Hines that has, 97% of our students in poverty. So first of all, we kind of get a bad rap in the community for our scores because no doubt we can do better and we are doing better. But our kids come to us, as far as elementary school goes, with a deficit of, say, a word deficit that they haven't heard over a million words compared to kids that go to schools in more affluent neighborhoods. And that's a big challenge when it comes to teaching a child how to learn how to read. Just giving them the schema to hang things on is very, very challenging for us. So we kind of get a bad rap. We also kind of get a bad rap because, you know, we have a lot of folks in the political realms in Texas saying, if you guys just did a better job, everything would be okay. If more money is not the solution. And for instance, like when we did the comparability study, we had to lose 3 or 4 teachers because we were over, the average student spending in Waco ISD. Whereas, you know, I've got 97% of my kids living in poverty. It takes a lot more personnel to manage those students and to make up for that million word deficit than it would in a school that has a lower rate of poverty.
And focusing specifically on your school at J.H. Hines, you have a lot of students that struggle with social and emotional issues. Can you elaborate on that? And can you also elaborate a little bit about what your school, what you're doing on campus to kind of address those needs?
We do have a lot of students that have social emotional challenges. We did receive a federal TIPS grant, Title I Priority Schools grant that we've hired some additional staff with that with federal grant money. We've hired a social and emotional teacher and a paraprofessional. We've also hired 7 behavioral aides to assist students that lose composure. you know, the way we view it at J.H. Hines is our students just lack some brain development, basically. Whereas we would have composure in certain situations, some of the structures, you know, the framework for understanding poverty, we understand that those kids, whenever you say something to them, another student says something to them, they're not going to lose face. If a teacher corrects them, they're not going to lose face and lose that argument. So we've got to help those kids develop the skills of composure, you know, and emotional stability. They're going to jump pretty quick to fight. And those seven behavioral aides and those social and emotional teachers that we hired kind of help them develop that structure. We view it like you're teaching a kid to read. You know, if a kid couldn't read, we wouldn't stick him in an ISS room and say, oh, in 3 days, come back and you'll know how to read. But we do that with behavior sometimes, and we're moving away from that model to a more relational model of helping the child develop the brain function and the social and emotional skills with those additional people.
And Dr. Jenkins, over at Indian Springs, the poverty rate there is not quite as high as J.H. Hines.
But we're still at about 93%. You know, it's still very high, and similar to what Hines is dealing with, we're dealing with the same thing in Indian Springs. Except, I think, you know, I want to make sure that we understand that there's an experience level deficit. And I think, you know, for our campus, that's really what we're trying to do with our TIPS grant, is provide different experiences for the children that we service and that we work with. Example, and I guess I'll be very basic with this, if you ask a student a question, we'll say a math question, and you compare a flight from Seattle to Dallas, and it's, you know, takes X amount of time and covers X amount of distance, you set up as a math problem. For many students, perhaps they can really understand that, and they can set that math problem up because of their experience level. For example, my own children that I've taken multiple times in an airplane and we've flown different spots, to them, they can set up that problem and they understand it. When you present that same problem to a student that's not been on an airplane, that's not left Waco, that hasn't been out of a certain area, and their experience is limited to what they see on television or what they hear about, again, it's a different learning that exists. So with you know, our campus, we understand it's about experiences. And for some of our learners, they've had an array of experiences, but we have many that have not. They've not left a neighborhood. They've not left Waco. And their experience level is extremely limited. And so with us, as we try to follow a state-mandated curriculum that's very prescriptive in nature, that says, you know, this is what you will teach and how you'll teach it, and you need to follow, and this is the rules of how we're going to assess your success. As we follow and try to do that, we also have to understand we have to supplement that with experience. So that's really what we're trying to do with the additional funding that we received. As Trey mentioned about cuts, well, his campus took cuts. We took cuts as well. In comparability, we lost two staff members. So rather than gain additional staff members, for knowing that we do have additional students with many gaps in their learning, it takes more staff to do that, we get less staff. So, you know, I think that's important to understand.
Some things that we've been working on here, reporting on, I recently reported on the Suspending Kids to School initiative, and I know that is a discretionary program. It's not, you know, it's not used at all campuses. It's up to the principals. And I was just wondering if that's the kind of program that you're implementing at your school for behavioral, or what kind of issues do you face behavioral-wise with more of those post-secondary students?
Right. And thanks for the question. Waco ISD has provided us additional behavioral support aides. And so, you know, at the front line of working with our discipline, we have two additional behavior aides that work with us on campus. So I think that has been a huge impact this year as far as the decrease in referrals. Part of one of our goals is obviously to try to cut back on the numbers of total referrals for the behavioral infractions. And with the behavior aides that we have in place right now, they're proactive, where they're quick to get into the intervention on the front end of the student. So before we even get to suspension, we have somebody that's helping focus and refocus the student and process whatever the behavioral issues. And then after that, then it can extend and go to a traditional referral for perhaps a suspension. We are working with trying to develop a few alternative programs, such as diversion, suspending kids to school, peer mediation and conflict. So there are programs that do exist, and we are working on trying to put those in place at Indian Spring.
Dr. Kane, I'll direct this question to you. I was wondering about, I've spoken with some people who talk highly of the Ruby Payne model. Is that something that Waco ISD utilizes as a district, or what kind of curriculum does the district as a whole use for low-income students in poverty? Is it that Ruby Payne model, or is it something different, or is it up to the discretion of the campuses?
Right. We require that our staff go through the Ruby Payne model, and that really is not a curriculum as much as a framework for understanding how to work with students and families from poverty. You know, when you're judging someone, you really can't help them. It is making certain that everyone has high expectations, because the things that Mr. Hall and Dr. Jenkins described, we are not using them as an excuse for don't expect much from these kids. What this tells us is this is the kid's situation. Now, what do we need to do differently? What can we expect differently? Example, at Hines one morning, before actually Mr. Hall got here, a parent drove up, had two first graders in the back of the car, and I mean they were fighting. They were having the parent opens the back door, gets both kids, I think they were twins, actually by the seat of the pants, throws them on the schoolyard, and drives off. Well, why would you call that parent and tell them you're having a discipline problem? So what we need to do is look at, we know that that parent isn't someone who's going to help in this situation. So what do we do? We don't lower our expectations. We don't say it's okay. We deal with the situation by understanding that relationships are important. And as Mr. Hall said, getting away from the punitive model, more into relationships. Now, that doesn't mean, oh, we have a good relationship, so I'm excusing you from the behavior. That is taking the time to make the child understand the behavior and understand why it's wrong and understand these consequences. For so many of these kids, their only ticket out of poverty is through Waco ISD. So it's very important that we look at the things that Ruby Payne has pointed out about relationships, about what resources, what financial resources they don't have, what physical resources, what family support resources. Use that to make that student successful and to make that teacher successful with that student.
At a school board meeting, actually, I've not made it to many school board meetings, but the one that I did make it
to. Well, they're exciting. You need to come.
Well, the one that I was at was very exciting. I will agree with that. And it was right as preliminary star scores were released. Those star scores showed 10 out of 22 Waco ISD schools, showed needed improvement. I'm curious to know, how do you as a district prepare your students for something like that? That's maybe, as Dr. Jenkins was saying, they've never been on an airplane. So how are they going to know this in a math test or something like that? How do you relate education through standardized testing for those students?
And that's why it takes us longer, because we have to do that kind of analysis that Dr. Jenkins did in that example for the entire test. What we didn't do was prepare for the STAR test when everyone else, they told us probably 8 years ago, okay, the STAR test is coming, and it's going to be a lot higher level thinking. No more drill and kill. It's going to be very high level thinking. We did not prepare as well as we should our teachers how to do that. Okay, so we were kind of behind as we started the STAR test. Then when you look at our students, we have to know what it is they don't know, what we need to give them, different strategies. And again, we don't have an unlimited amount of money to do that. And at the same time, you can't give up fine arts and recess and those kinds of things, because those are important as well. So what it shows is that we are not as good at teaching our students the higher level thinking skills. So we have broken it down. We've done a task analysis of everything. And our lesson plans are getting much more specific now. We are going to try everything, because we are going to be successful. It's going to take us a little bit longer, because our kids are coming from a different place, but we're going to get there.
Mr. Hall and Dr. Jenkins, you guys are on those campuses that are struggling star-wise. Dr. Jenkins, this is your first year, so you're kind of working on an overhaul, so to speak. But, you know, Indian Springs last year saw 75% of its staff replaced. So what do you do as a new administrator on a campus to kind of, bring a different way of doing things to be successful on the standardized testing.
I think for Indian Spring and specific, my strategy is I'm kind of using what the Thomas Crane strategy with the coaching. My job is doing a lot of coaching, as Dr. Kane mentioned, being in the classroom, really knowing what's going on in the classroom, trying to spend more time on the instructional part of school. I think it's very easy as a school administrator to get caught up in all the logistics, all the managerial components, because it can be overwhelming with just the different aspects, the different reports, and so forth. And, you know, my strategy is I've a lot of the logistical items, I've got other people working on those, so I can spend more time in the classroom coaching and working with the teachers. Because we know with the children that we service, we know that we have to meet a lot of their basic needs first before we can even get to the academic side. So on a daily basis, when learners come to school, as Dr. Kane mentioned, some of the students will come in and they have, right from the start, behavioral concerns or behavioral problems. So you can't just jump and start teaching that student academics, because they're going to show up to the classroom and they're going to take the social and emotional problems that they have with them to the class, and they want attention. They want help. They need something. So as a campus, then what do we do? How much time do we spend with that particular student or with the class? And, you know, I think what specifically with me and my strategy is trying to coach the teachers to understand that we are working with different types of students, that before we can get to math problems, before we can get to writing an essay and get the student focused, we've got to make sure their basic needs are provided for and they're taken care of. And that as a teacher, you understand it's more than just teaching the content. So with new teachers, as an example, straight out of the university, for some of them, the university didn't prepare them. They didn't prepare them for what this job entails and the daily duties. So me as the leader and as the coach, I've got to try to make sure that I'm helping them understand the role of teaching. I'm helping them see Ruby Payne framework. I'm helping them work with, for example, the Flippin's Capturing Kids' Heart, that they understand there's more to schooling than just the curriculum piece. And we can't get to curriculum until we get to the other thing. So my role and working with the newer teachers, for example, we have on the campus, 42% of our teachers are brand new to teaching. So there's gaps with just the teachers. So in a way, it's almost like I'm the teacher of teachers, and I've got to kind of take it that way to help them with the students. And the more time that I can spend with the teacher and the less time filling out paperwork and doing managerial tasks, the better our students will profit from that in the long run. So we are a new campus for the most part. As you mentioned, three-fourths of the staff is new. We do have additional funds and some people that are helping us with this. But there is a lot of laying a framework. And we came in and the framework really didn't exist. So we're laying that now, and we want it to be solid. And so as long as my focus is instruction, the campus will benefit and the students will make progress.
And Mr. Hall, what are some things that you guys are changing up this year that maybe you did last year that wasn't as successful as you were hoping? And what are your goals for STAR this year?
Well, like John, I also have a coaching model as well. And we're really trying to take and onboard those people that came in with the Title I Priority Schools grant. And I'm spending a lot of time coaching them so we can, like, increase their leadership capacity to coach teachers. I've got about 30 teachers on campus and two assistant principals. So each one of us have 10 teachers that we meet with, observe probably about an hour a week, and then have standing coaching conferences for about 30 to 45 minutes with those teachers. And then we, through reflective questioning and, you know, goal setting, we help them understand their areas of improvement. And a lot of what Dr. Jenkins said is absolutely correct. We have to help teachers, and a lot of my teachers are new as well. We have hired some master teachers at each grade level to try to help increase that teacher leadership capacity. But we often have to help them understand that, you know, 20 years ago, your job was teaching math and reading. Now you've first of all got to look at that behavioral piece, because if you've got three or four highly reactive kids in your room that don't have the skills to compose themselves, that don't have the social and emotional skills, you're first going to have to deal with that. That's what the behavioral aids have done. What we found with a previous approach with putting all, say, the boys, single gender classrooms, putting 12 highly reactive boys in one classroom was they set each other off. And when one of them was set off, the whole classroom started chiming in. It was like a battle to be the alpha of the boys' behavior classroom. So that was really a challenge for us. It didn't work really well. So we, with Dr. Kane's help, she said, hey, what if we provide you with some more positions for behavioral management? And she said, if you know, she kind of was bargaining with us, if you, I'll give you one if you'll hire one with your federal money. And I was like, I'll hire eight. If you'll hire four, I'll hire four. And she was like, oh, I don't know if I'm ready for that. You know, so we kind of negotiated that. But those behavioral aids, you know, take kids really that are really active and pull them out. We've also, you know, teachers sometimes are not good at what I found at Hines is they're not really good at being data informed. So we spent a lot of time just working how assessment drives instruction, you know, and how to trace those skills back down. When you've got a kid that's a couple of years behind, say is in fourth grade, but really is reading at a second grade level, that presents lots of challenges in delivering instruction. And so we're teaching teachers through, you know, use of some data assessment models, how to really drill down and work in small groups, you know, instead of whole classroom instruction like we used to all be, you know, everybody was great at. We've worked to really pull them down where they're just working with three or four kids at a time, and the other children have an aide with them, and they're working on basic skills. And so those are some of the things we've done at Hines.
And Dr. Kane, going back to that school board meeting that I attended that one night, you also said, and I remember that very specifically because it stood out in my mind, but you also said that Waco ISD cannot be successful until and I'm sorry, I might be paraphrasing it, but Waco ISD cannot be successful until we have teachers who want to work with children in poverty. Like, that is their main priority. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, when you have a school district with high poverty, you have a more difficult time attracting the teachers that you want to attract. There are some people who want to be teachers because they want to be in a Waco ISD. They feel like that is their calling. There are other teachers who do not want to be in a Waco ISD because they don't want to have to deal with some of the fallout from poverty. It's harder to be a teacher in a school of poverty, and that's okay. It doesn't make them less of a teacher, and we're happy if they know they don't need to be here, that they're not here, because they need to be with the kids that they feel best with. So we will always have a higher turnover rate. If you look historically at the data, school districts with high poverty have a higher teacher turnover rate. So that means we probably will have to work harder at attracting teachers and getting them to understand how to be successful. Because the teachers, they just want to be successful at what they do. So we need to have a stronger staff development program to make them successful. We need to have principals who are coaches. We need to make certain that that skill level is there and that they have the support. The behavior aids are supports for teachers. The instructional aids, we have as many people in there helping as possible. So we know that will always be a problem for us. Some of our teachers just thrive with our kids. They wouldn't be anywhere else. So we value them and let them know how much we value them. There are other teachers we counsel out of being in Waco ISD because they're not a good fit. And we will take some teachers that we know aren't quite ready and double down on the training, and because we want to keep them. We want them to be ours. We want to lessen that turnover rate. We know we're not ever going to get it down to what a district with 4% poverty is going to have. So we take our teachers, and they respond very well. We're very fortunate with the teachers that we have. They are committed. They are committed to those kids. It's amazing how hard some of them work and what other teachers might not put up with, but there are teachers who can blot out certain things and focus on the kid and build that relationship, because that's what the Ruby Payne work shows and what we have verified. When you build a relationship, not just with the student, but with the family, when these guys call the parents, it can't start out with, well, here's what so-and-so did. It's, remember when I talked to you last time, you were going to help us with this? We just want to be interested in the program and work on the relationship that way, too.
You know, there's a stigma out there that children in poverty cannot be successful, or children in poverty cannot will always stay in that cycle. And I'm wondering from each of you why you think that's not true, and why you think that's not true here in Waco.
It is not true. Every student wants to be that star. They want to be the one that the teacher points to, and they want to take home the little happy faces and all the things at night. They just don't know how. So we come at them from that approach, that we know that, so what do we need to do to make them successful? They can be taught. They will be taught in Waco ISD. We are getting better every year, and we will continue to get better. And we will show everybody in Texas how a school with high poverty teaches students and gives them that ticket out of poverty.
You know, Jill, I think it's really about expectations, like Dr. Kane just talked about. It's really about expectations for the adults and the students included. We really have worked really hard to raise the expectations for what it means to be a student at J.H. Hines. So we've instituted some, you know, like Harambe in the morning, where we have a greeting ceremony and they come and they do cheers and chants and positive affirmations. And really, we've just set the bar really high for them. And so they know from all the adults, what are the expectations? When they fail to meet those expectations, we're going to support them with the behavioral aides, the counselors, the social workers. But really, it's about setting high expectations and believing our kids can do it. If the adults in your building and your campus and your district believe our kids can do it, we're going to figure out a way that our kids can do it. It may take longer. It may take more effort. It may take more money. It may take a lot of different things. And we may have to try a lot of different things to reach them. But as long as we believe, all the adults in the building believe that they can reach high standards, then they can. And there are plenty of examples of high poverty, high performing schools, you know, in Texas and the United States. And we intend to be one of those.
And I think for Indian Spring, you know, yes, we have belief. Yes, we have high expectations. But for us also, it's about experience. So all three of those components tying together and trying to get the parents involved. As Trey mentioned, there are many school systems, high poverty, that are very successful in the state of Texas. For our campus specific, I think it's about stability. It's about coaching our teachers. It is about the expectations. It's about believing in ourselves and our children and not giving up. But it's us putting forth, I think, the extra effort and the extra work. Example, I had a parent or a teacher come to me the other day, just confused about how to communicate with a parent for a student that was struggling. And I said, well, have you done ABC? She says, well, I tried, but all measures failed. And I said, okay, so what else do you know of? She's like, well, I guess a home visit. I said, well, have you done a home visit? Well, no. And I said, okay, let's do a home visit. So that was a step. So I go to the house, meet with the parent who's sitting on the porch, and we visit, and we have a conversation about the child and the student and the learning. Next week, student shows back up on Monday morning, different student, different attitude. But in this case, it took the principal to stop, let me take time, and let me do that extra effort. Let me put forth the extra work that's needed. Not, you know, it's I got to do this. And because of that, the effect is, at least for some period of time, that student now is re-engaged in learning. And so for us, yes, it takes belief. Yes, it takes expectations. It takes experience. But it's also doing that extra work. And so we've got to have a stable environment for our children. We've got to put forth the extra work. And over time, we're going to get better.
You've been listening to my conversation with Waco ISD Superintendent Bonnie Kane, J.H. Hines Principal Trey Hall, and Indian Spring Middle School Principal John Jenkins. This interview is part of KWBU News' month-long series about poverty in Waco. You can find a recording of this program and last week's interview with Mayor Malcolm Duncan and Virginia Dupuy at kwbu.org. Next week, KWBU's Ryland Barton will be talking about food insecurity in Waco with local leaders. With KWBU News in Waco, I'm Jill Ament.